Adventures in Research. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. In 1940, when the Royal Air Force hurled back the Nazi Luftwaffe, Winston Churchill paid eloquent tribute to the men of the RAF. In so doing, he was also paying tribute to the airplane which helped to make the victory possible, the Spitfire, and to the man who designed the Spitfire, Reginald Joseph Mitchell. What kind of man was Reginald Mitchell? Let's look at him on an important day in his life, the day he proposed to his future wife. The time, a summer's day in the year 1919. The place, one of those rocky little English islands off the coast of Devon.
So you see, they really think I'm an important person. They've promoted me to chief designer and engineer.
How wonderful.
With an increase in salary, if you please. Don't forget that.
I should hope you'd get an increase in salary. After all, it's only fair.
Thank you, my dear.
Well, isn't it? If the Supermarine Aviation Company wants the best designer in England...
Hold on now. I'm not the best designer in England.
You certainly are. Really, Reg, you're too modest, much too modest. Don't you know that people won't take the trouble to find out about you? You've got to tell them yourself.
Very well, then. I shall. And I think I shall begin with you.
Oh, why me? I'm already convinced.
Because, because...
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell you something. Something important.
Yes?
It's something I say, will you look at those seagulls? Aren't they magnificent?
Oh, they're very pretty.
Do you know something? I've always wanted to build a plane that would fly like a bird does. A plane with wings, body, and tail all in one.
And will your plane flap its wings?
Of course not, silly. But it will be a monoplane instead of a biplane, the way they are now. And it won't have all those struts and sticks and wires to slow it down. Not if I have anything to say about it.
Oh, well, I suppose I should be glad you're only looking at seagulls.
Why? What do you mean?
You might be looking at another girl.
Nonsense! Why on earth would I look at another girl? Forgive me, dearest. That's what I really wanted to tell you. I wanted to say that I love you more than I've ever loved anyone. I wanted to tell you how much I... Oh, bother, I'm not much good at that sort of talk. Will you marry me, will you?
Oh, darling. Of course I'll marry you. Of course.
Now then... Take a look at that seagull. Isn't it beautiful?
It's the most beautiful seagull in the whole wide world.
Mrs. Mitchell was quite aware that her husband was a man of extraordinary ambition and energy. But even she was surprised at his ceaseless devotion to his work. Yes, and maybe she was just a bit annoyed at first.
Good evening, Mrs. Mitchell. I'm Captain Summers.
Oh, you're a test pilot, aren't you?
That's right. I fly some of your husband's planes.
Yes, I know. He mentioned you frequently.
Oh, does he? Well, he asked me to pop in and tell you not to wait dinner. He's going to work late tonight.
Oh, I see. Did he say anything else?
No, he didn't. Mrs. Mitchell, if you'll excuse me, I know exactly how you feel because, well, my wife feels the same way. She says I should have married an airplane.
Monoplane or biplane?
I'll bet you know every detail of your husband's work.
Oh, I'm an expert on wind velocity, airspeed, and propeller pitch.
Good. You know, we airplane people, we're not a bad lot once you get to know us. Oh, well, I really must be going. Good night, Mrs. Mitchell.
Good night, Captain. Oh, Captain.
Yes, ma'am?
I don't mean to be curious, But what are you going to tell your wife?
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. I haven't the vaguest idea. Good night.
Yes, Mitchell's driving ambition never allowed him to let up for a moment. The passing year served only to increase his devotion, his singleness of purpose, until it seemed as though his very life expressed itself in the roar of airplane motors. In 1925, one of his planes was entered in the Schneider Trophy Race. Unfortunately, due to damage caused by a hangar that collapsed, the plane crashed during trials. At a meeting of the board of Mitchell's company, there was considerable sentiment against the efforts of the young designer, sentiment that expressed itself in no uncertain terms.
"And it's high time we stopped wasting money on harebrained ideas. I told Mr. Mitchell his design was impractical. I therefore vote that we direct ourselves from now on to the manufacture of commercial aircraft, and commercial aircraft only."
But destiny refused to allow the genius of Mitchell to lie fallow. In 1927, when the Royal Air Force decided to compete officially for the Schneider Trophy, Mitchell was called in as designer. Soon, under his eager hands, emerged a beautiful, low-winged monoplane. A plane that incorporated the basic features of the Spitfire. Hear that? That was practically the same plane that won permanent possession of the trophy for England. Here are the figures. 1927, speed, 281 miles per hour. 1929, 328 miles. And the final victory with a speed of 407 miles. A triumph for Reginald Mitchell. Yes, Mitchell had richly earned the vacation he'd planned for the summer of 1933. As a matter of fact, the only reason he went to see a doctor was to please his wife.
"That's right, Doctor. I insisted on it."
"Mm-hmm. Well, now it's over, I'm not sorry. Now we can go away without a care in the world. How about it, Doctor?"
"Mr. Mitchell, I'm afraid you'll have to cancel your holiday."
"Cancel our holiday? Why?"
"Because you're as ill as a man can be."
"Doctor."
"Mrs. Mitchell, this is serious. Your husband must take care of himself, good care. And he must give up work entirely."
"But that's impossible. I can't give up my work."
"You must give it up, sir. If you don't..."
"Doctor, we want the truth. All of it. How bad is it?"
"It's bad enough for me to insist on a major operation."
"Now?"
"Now. At once."
If the operation bought time for Reginald Mitchell, it also bought time for England. The following year found him high in the Austrian Alps, where he'd gone to recuperate. It was there that he first realized the threat of war that was growing in Germany. From the tone of a local meeting that was going on, a meeting of a so-called flying club in a quaint little Austrian inn.
"Also, wir müssen mehr und immer mehr arbeiten, für Deutschland und für frei zu sein."
"Excitable chaps, aren't they? What do you suppose they're saying?"
"Oh, nothing very important. Probably had too much beer. Oh, Red."
"Yes, dear?"
I think this gentleman wants to talk to us."
"Oh.
Good evening. I couldn't help overhearing your conversation. I wondered whether I might be of service."
"Well, my wife and I were wondering what was going on over there at those tables."
"It seems like some sort of meeting."
"It is a meeting of one of our many flying clubs."
"Oh, that's interesting. I happen to be connected with aircraft myself. I'm a designer. Name's Mitchell."
"Oh, Herr Mitchell. A designer. We could use you in the Reich."
"To design commercial planes?"
"No, Herr Mitchell. You see, we no longer feel it necessary to conceal our purposes. The Third Reich of Adolf Hitler has a right to its proper place in the sun. If the other nations of the world have military planes, then Germany will have them. Hundreds. thousands.
I see.
We Germans are not asleep. We know that the next war will be won not by armies, but by air power. By bombers blasting enemy cities. By destroying the power to resist.
How frightful.
Frightful? Perhaps. But possibly it may not be necessary if certain other nations cooperate. And we think they will cooperate. Especially when they learn that we have 5,000 bombers.
5,000 bombers? You have 5,000 bombers now?
Not yet, but we will have. German technical genius can do anything.
Look, Red. That fellow has jumped up on the table. Listen to him.
Ein Wolf! Ein Reich! Eine Tür!
Sieg Heil!
Ein Hitler!
Sieg Heil!
Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil!
How Mitchell set to work to design the Spitfire is by this time history. But no history can describe how he drove himself against the advice of his doctor. And no historian can hope to recapture the drama of that moment when test pilot Summers came to his bedside with exciting news.
Oh, she's good, Reg. Dives at 10 miles a minute with 8 machine guns spitting. And maneuver, she'll turn inside anything in the air.
How about the wings?
Oh, perfect. That elliptical design is positively revolutionary. She flies like a bird.
And the engine, Summers?
The same. Rolls-Royce. Red with a 2-stage supercharger.
You think the Air Ministry will accept her?
No, they'll welcome her with open arms, my boy. Open arms.
Then there was that moment several days later when the telephone rang. Mrs. Mitchell took the message and tiptoed upstairs to her husband's room.
Who was the phone call from?
From the factory. They just heard. The Air Ministry have accepted your plane, and they're going to call it the Spitfire.
Spitfire. That's a very good name. A very good name. Spitfire.
On June 11th, 1937, Reginald Mitchell died. Already the Spitfire had become the fastest military plane in the world. And 3 years later, when the Germans hurled their bombers against the heart of Britain, a small band of RAF pilots were ready. Ready in their Spitfires, which Mitchell gave his life to build. Truly, the Spitfire became a great fighter plane with its 2,000 horsepower, pressure-cooled engine, 5-bladed constant-speed propeller, a speed of over 400 miles per hour, and a service ceiling of 40,000 feet. Winston Churchill spoke for the entire civilized world when he said, "Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few." But Mrs. Mitchell spoke for her husband in these words.
"I want to pay tribute, as I know my husband would like me to do, to all the brave young men of Fighter Command who fought and won the Battle of Britain. Some of them did not come back. They, like my husband, died for Britain. It is of them that we must always think with pride and a new resolve when we plan the world of peace again. That resolve must be to see that his wider dream comes true. His dream of the airplane bringing all nations into one bond of peace. That must be his enduring monument."
And that's today's story by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. Join us again next week for another transcribed story by Dr. Thomas on Adventures in Research.